This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 275, where we're going to talk about Azure Kubernetes news live from Ignite. Oh, no, I want to re-record that. We're not live at all. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 275, where today AC and I are going to talk to Brendan Burns about Azure Kubernetes news from Ignite 2018, recorded live October 11th, 2018.
Inbox Zero is a thing of the past. We're all so inundated with email, and that's where Sanebox comes in. Think of it as an EMT for your email. As messages flow in, Sanebox does the triage for you. Sane Later sifts all distracting stuff out of your inbox so you can focus on only the important emails. That's just a taste. It also has nifty features like Sane Black Hole and Sane Reminders. Best of all, you can use Sanebox with any email client or phone, anywhere you check your email. See how Sanebox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit sanebox.com/MSCloudShow. Start your free trial and get a $25 credit.
AC.
Hey man, how's it going?
I think I've recovered.
Yeah, I hear you.
Regular sleep rhythm. Been a couple of weeks now, so it takes a little while to recover.
It definitely does. It's there's a whole, you know, it's nice to get back in like the routine after a conference like that, and to get back to just back to what you're used to doing, back to the standard stuff again. You know, you're back to your internet, you're getting back to the normal, you know, work routine that you've got, family routine, all that stuff. So.
My sister gave us a little sort of, I guess, for want of a better word, picture, right, that you hang on the wall. And it's in our bathroom, and it says, wake up and smell the routine.
That's good.
I'm greeted with that every morning as I walk into the bathroom, so it's pretty funny. But how you been doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Staying busy, knocking out. I seem like I've been punching out lots of little things that need to get done in the last week or two. So it's been just lots of little work stuff, getting ready to really get back into focusing on start building out some new content for my course. And yeah, just kind of plugging along.
Feeling of
avoiding a hurricane.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Good news. Hurricane Matthew was about 3 hours to the west of us. We got effects from it, but we didn't get it wasn't a significant event, like no kids out of school or anything for us, but it was breezy. It was breezy and a lot of rain, but nothing like what they dealt with over in the panhandle.
No, that looks pretty brutal right now.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. Hey, some other interesting news. This morning, I woke up to, you know, having my cornflakes, as you do, and seeing that for the first time since 1975, Soyuz had a failure.
Yeah, a big one.
Quite a big one. Fortunately, no astronauts were affected. Or not affected, that's the wrong word. They were affected. They were in it. But were not killed or harmed in any way by the sounds of it. But yes, Soyuz had a launch failure, which is, it was carrying two astronauts, a Russian and an American, to ISS. Supposed to be going to ISS. And 2 minutes and 10 seconds into launch, where the booster separation normally happens, there's four boosters on the outside of the core stage, and they separated, and then lots of other parts fell off.
Yeah, and, parts that are not supposed to fall off.
Yeah. What is it, a RUD? A rapid unexpected disassembly? Yeah, fortunately, the Soyuz capsule itself was separated from the core stage, and the astronauts landed, I think, 15 minutes later, something like that, 20 minutes later, something like that. They had a ballistic reentry, which subjects them to some pretty eyeballs in your throat G levels. I think they were at 9.7 Gs for a while, which I don't know about you, but I don't know if I'd survive that. Astronauts are pretty hardcore though.
Yeah, that's pretty intense, man. That was we got a link to, you found a really good link on a subreddit or on Reddit that has a good roll up with a bunch of videos and stuff to it as well. But it was, man, it's amazing to me that, you know, usually when you see a rocket fail like that, and to be able to do an abort and bring the crew back or to bring the payload back, it's a significant event to be able to have that work. Usually it's, you have all these different things, but you can't really test for all those scenarios. But to see that this one worked really as well as it, as flawlessly, I mean, granted, they went through a hell of a run. They're alive and uninjured. That's crazy.
So there's speculation that about why it happened, but that'll all come out in the news in due course. But it puts ISS in an interesting position because there's only one Soyuz up there right now that's capable of bringing the current crew back, and its expiry date or its best before date is in December. So that is rapidly approaching, and they're trying to figure out, do the crew come back and leave ISS empty for the first time in 17 years, or do they go past the Soyuz best before date and just risk it, or do they send up another Soyuz on an unmanned, you know, unmanned to begin with because they won't have done the investigation. So we'll see where they go, but still a normally Soyuz is touch wood, bulletproof, like it hasn't had failures in a really long time. And it's just interesting to see that this happened, especially with what's going on with the whole incident. And the head of the Russian Space Agency right now, you know, like blaming NASA astronauts for intentionally drilling a hole. So all of this is just like doubling up on that, and it's just going to be carnage. Yeah.
You said, you know, the thing with Soyuz, you know, Soyuz is like one of the, even though it's a really old design, it's one of the most reliable. And in this case here, like there was nothing wrong with Soyuz, and there was nothing, and it performed flawlessly. It looks like it was a booster problem, or the booster, or either the main booster or the auxiliary boosters that are used to get it off the pad and everything. It was for the first stage, I guess. It was an issue with the first stage. It wasn't an issue with the Soyuz itself. So, and like you said, both of them, the Soyuz and the first stage, they're really reliable. So it's pretty crazy.
Soyuz has only had two failures in its history, super early on, right? First one, parachutes didn't open and it went in full speed with one person on board. And then the second was a depressurization with three crew on board. But that was back in 1975. So, and they were both during re-entry. There haven't been any failures on launch before. So this is interesting, to say the least.
But yeah, so well into launch too. That was interesting as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. Now, before we get into some news, we have one other thing we want to chat about, and that for the first time in Cloud Show history, we're going to be backing a Kickstarter.
We are. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one too. And this is pretty significant backing.
Yeah, exactly.
So
We touched on this last episode where I think we were chatting about this project, the Solo project, right, which is a two-factor auth solution with a hardware token for doing logins. And Azure AD are going to start supporting this in early January, I believe, or starting in January with FIDO2 support. And so we thought, what better way to back a cool open source hardware project on Kickstarter than buying a whole bunch of them?
Yeah. You and I are both backers. I mean, we were both individual backers at the beginning.
Yeah, we're already backers, but I think it's safe for us to say now that we're going in at, I think, one of the highest levels of backing. We're going to get 110 of these things or something like that.
105.
105 of these keys. It's going to be in an exclusive Cloud Show color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be branded with the Cloud Show logo on the keys, which I think is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to back that project for 105 of these things and give them away to listeners and guests on the show.
Yeah.
Details of which are to be determined. Some good ideas about how to give them away. But this is really cool. I love that it's open source project. It's close to you as well, right? You have a cousin involved, I believe, in the project, which is pretty sweet. So there's a family connection there. It's right up our listeners' alley, I think. Everybody listening to the show, if you're not doing two-factor auth, you should be. And it's even better when you've got one of these dongles in terms of, or keys, I should say. Being able to tap a button on one of the keys, plug it on USB, it works across Mac and Windows, all that sort of stuff. It's really sweet. And it just makes login much, much safer. And so we thought, hey, well, that's a really cool project and let's do it.
Yeah, and you're right. There is a connection to it. I mean, where one of the individuals that's involved with it, it's him and his brother. He's married to my cousin, one of my first cousins. We talked about a couple different things a while back and he went through and he was alluding to something that he was working on, but I didn't really pick up on what it was. And then all of a sudden I see this show up about a couple, like 2 weeks ago or so, and saw the Kickstarter launch last week. And as of the time of recording, it's already a very successful one. It's all been, the project is funded. They had a goal of $5,000. They've got over 1,500 backers. They're halfway through the campaign. They're over $60,000 in funding. I'm happy that we are able to do this. to back them, but I'm more excited about being able to back them and to give the benefits from this to our listeners to really promote this level of security using the FIDO2 tech and everything with your logins, both, you know, if you were on a Microsoft platform, a Google platform, if you're, you know, for Facebook, all these different GitHub, for all these different things. It'd be really cool to see. I'm looking forward to giving these away and having a play with it. I've never used one of these. One of these USB or NFC keys before. I know you have, but yeah. I'm pretty thrilled about dipping my toes in the water.
Yeah, no, they're really cool. So I think people will find these really useful, and you can use them for all sorts of sites like GitHub and Facebook and Google accounts and all that sort of stuff. But Azure AD are adding support for them soon, or adding support for FIDO2. And that's really, I think, what tipped the scale for us, right? I really want hardware login for Azure AD. Anyway, yeah. So that's the Solar project. We'll link to it off in the show notes. I think we linked last week.
Yeah.
Also go take a look at that. But we should get these guys on the show at some point. That'd be really cool.
Absolutely. When they first start shipping, we should get them on the show, and we should have a fun little chat about it.
Yes, sure. All right.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
All right, I say we've got a great interview lined up for this week. But before that, we thought we'd cover a couple of news items going on around the cloudy world, so to speak. So anything in particular that has caught your eye this past week that you want to kick us off with?
I have two things I'd like to highlight. Both of them, I want to highlight two Google things real quick. One of them is that this is going to be, I think we might have talked about this before, but I found this to be really interesting. You know, remember, so Microsoft has purchased GitHub and the deal is supposed to close later this year. Well, lo and behold, Alphabet, so the parent holding company for Google and YouTube and all those other ones, Alphabet has backed GitLab. So it's almost like, it looks like that Alphabet or that the Alphabet's making a direct shot across the bow at Microsoft after they lost out on the whole GitHub acquisition when they were going toe-to-toe with Microsoft.
Yeah, that's kind of like, take that, take this, take that, you know?
Yeah.
Tit for tat, so to speak. We'll see who wins that war, I guess. But hey, yeah. It was good. I'm glad there's not one player.
Yeah, I mean, competition's good, and it's just, it'll be curious to see how it plays out. The other one, though, that in a not-so-good news from Google is last week, or earlier this week, Google announced, or I guess the Wall Street Journal announced, because Google would not announce it, that it had been discovered that there was a massive data breach with Google+, their social networking thing, their social networking offering, which was supposed to compete with like Facebook and Twitter and everybody. And Google realized that there was something in their API that people who had made their profiles private, something in their API was kind of ignoring that and was just showing information about other people's profiles, the fact that they had made their profiles private.
Oh, dear.
The sad part of this is that Google realized, so here we go, the company discovered a bug in one of Google+'s people APIs that allowed apps to access data from Google+ profiles that weren't marked as public. It included static data fields such as name, email, occupation, gender, and age. Didn't include information from the post. The bug was patched in March of 2018, but Google didn't inform their users. And the reason why they didn't do it is they were afraid of what the fallout was going to end up being. So how's that for trying to be transparent? I mean, that is, this happened and they patched it. What is that? We're in October now, so 5 months ago. And we still don't see anything. Or I don't know, 5 months. I did the math really quick on that. Was it 7 months? Thank you. But pretty big deal. Now, two of the bits of news came out of this. One was that according to the post from Google, is they kind of said, yeah, so 90% of the Google+ sessions, they lasted less than 5 seconds. Basically, nobody was using Google+.
Yeah, I was going to say, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, did it really make a sound?
Exactly. And then the other side of it was Google said, yeah, We're just going to shut it down. So Google Plus is getting shut down.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. It'll continue on for enterprise users, but it's getting shut down for consumers.
Well, there's still a bunch of data in there, right? It's a legit breach. So like if somebody had found that hole and had taken all the data, that's not cool, right? Even if you don't use it anymore, your data is still there. So yeah, I don't think anybody's going to lose sleep over them shutting it down though.
Yeah.
Google have not been that successful with their social networking activities.
Nobody cares.
I didn't really like their concept of circles, though. How you could define circles of friends, and you could put people in different circles, and that would dictate what you shared. I thought that was really cool. Anyway,
yeah.
Speaking of sharing, Microsoft have decided to open up a bunch of their patent portfolio. Now there are conflicting reports about what this means, but there are reports that say things like Microsoft open sources its entire patent portfolio. And I don't believe that to be the case. So what they are doing, though, is they've joined the Open Invention Network, the OIN, which is an open source patent consortium. And basically what it is a patent sharing organization, right? So they grant royalty-free licenses to all the other members. So I can't say you could classify this as open sourcing their patents. I don't know. That doesn't seem right to me because it's not to everybody. It's just to members of this consortium. And I don't think it's all their patents either because it's like there's 60,000 of them. A, they've definitely got more than 60,000 patents. But also, B, they call out in a couple of articles and news items that it doesn't include some stuff from like legacy Windows and Office and things. So like, for example, one of the big ones everybody immediately jumped to is the FAT file system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Microsoft charges for access to those patents, and they make a lot of money off them in things like Android phone makers and stuff. I don't know if FAT is one of them in particular, but there's a bunch of patents that they license to Android makers. And so some of that stuff, I'm not sure if that's covered. It's not entirely clear exactly what it all covers. But anywho, the nuts and the bolts of it are they're putting 60,000 of these patents into this, for cross-licensing into this membership of the Open Invention Network, which is great news for Linux, I think, and some of the other members, just taking away that fear of being sued by Microsoft for patent infringement on some of these projects that are governed by that. I think it's a really good move on Microsoft's part. It really goes to show that they're behind open source in general and willing to support those projects this way. And other members of the OIN are Google, IBM, Red Hat, and SUSE. So we should see that help a bunch with developments in those by those other companies and those projects and things without freaking out that Microsoft's going to sue the living daylights out of them.
And it really goes to show too. I mean, people, when Microsoft bought GitHub, a lot of people freaked out about their open source projects, and we got to get off of GitHub now that Microsoft is owning it, and they didn't really trust them. But I mean, it just kind of shows that yet again, this is a huge action, but it's yet another action backing up what they've said they're going to be, how they're more open, and they're trying to do like the right things for the industry and stuff. And it's just it's something that I think that Google had always had that reputation. And man, look at these last few articles that we just kind of ran through on the news where Google has this massive security breach. They decide to hide it from everybody or not talk about it. Mm. And then Microsoft turns around and opens up, whether it's all of them, whether it's most of them, whether it's regardless, it's a lot of them, to open up their patents and let other people use them. I mean, shows a very big difference between the two companies.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's just fascinating that it's come this far in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
But it's making great news, so good on them for supporting the community like that. Really cool. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I assume we have one or two other Microsoft-related news things here. You want to go ahead and do another one, or you want me to do
sure.
one?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no worries. Wunderlist, the great to-do app?
Yeah.
That got bought by Microsoft? So some of the early founders of that, in fact, most of the early founders, that's a contradiction, not a contradiction, that's a given, are founders. All of the founders.
Oxymoron.
Left Microsoft a while ago after the acquisition of Wunderlist and are now starting a new company called Pitch, which has just raised like close to $20 million to take on PowerPoint presentations. Now, this is kind of a fool's errand in some ways, right? Because many have come and gone trying to take PowerPoint on.
Mm.
But hey, who knows? This might be the time. What I did really like about it was a quote from Christian Reber, who's the CEO, and he was the co-founder of Wunderlist. He said, "It's a presentation tool for the Slack generation." which I thought was fascinating. Because
it's an interesting way to describe it.
They're basically saying, we're inventing a better mousetrap, right? Mm. We're going to create a better mousetrap, and it's going to be modern and slick and easy to use and better suited to today's modern workforce. That's what I read into that quote. So they've gone and raised $19 million in a Series A, and they're projecting to launch in the summer of 2019. So not too far away, but interesting to see them go on and compete with Microsoft again. Who knows? He might be up for selling a second company to Microsoft.
That is pretty cool, though, man. That's interesting that it's I'd be curious to see, especially from someone or from a group that has such a good track record of building something that the community really loved and really embraced. And now to see if they're going to try something, go after something else and to try and build a better mousetrap, like you said.
Yeah.
And give them the benefit of the doubt. They've done it once. Why can't they do it again?
Totally.
I've absolutely loved Wunderlist. In fact, I still use it. I'm still not completely switched over to the Microsoft To-Do app.
I love Wunderlist. It's great.
Yeah. There's another bit of Microsoft news here. Going back to the changing of the times. Remember when Microsoft talked about a while back, was it 3 years ago, Mark Rusinovich, CTO of Azure, he said that, there's one in four Azure instances, one of the four instances in Azure of like VMs was a Linux machine.
Yeah.
And then last year in 2017, Scott Guthrie got up and said, hey, 40%. Of Azure virtual machines are all Linux. Well, just this week, now Scott Guthrie is saying it's about half now, but it that's not exact, and they can't be exact numbers because so much of the VM, so much of the instances that are spun up are kind of episodic. They spin up for handle capacity, and then they get shut back down. Linux is really useful for that because it boots so fast and it's very, very lightweight. So it depends on the day. But they are seeing that it's now about half, Linux represents about half of Azure, with Windows being the other big piece of it. And every day they still keep seeing Linux usage going up, up and up. So it's funny. I talked to somebody the other day and they were, we were talking about something about containers. It was news to me that the new Azure Functions, the Gen 2, allows you to deploy your code as a container instead of just deploying it with like JavaScript or .NET Core or something like that. You can actually deploy it as a container. And the person I was talking to was like, the only downside is that it's got to be a Linux container. It can't be like a Windows container. I was like, it doesn't affect me. Like, but it's Linux. I'm like, people on Azure don't care about it.
Yeah, exactly. And now with like doing .NET Core and stuff like that in containers and all that, like you're still doing .NET. You just don't care about how it runs.
SQL runs on Linux.
It's just you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it's no longer a decision. It's not as much of a decision point before, which is, hey, I want to be able to do this. Oh, sorry, you can't do it. You're not on Windows or you're not on Linux. Yeah. You can't do that. And now it's just it doesn't matter. It's just you pick your OS. Cross-platform is a bigger selling point these days.
Yeah, you don't have to pick the red pill or the blue pill.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hey, now, before we get into our interview, there's one article I want to point out, which is very pertinent for this chat that we're about to have in the interview. It's a Kubernetes comparison. A managed Kubernetes service comparison between GKE, which is the Google engine, Microsoft's AKS, which is the managed Kubernetes service from Microsoft, and Amazon's EKS. And this came out, I just noticed this week. I think I found it on Hacker News, actually. I just found it really interesting. If you're looking at doing Kubernetes and you're trying to evaluate the different platforms, there's a nice, easy-to-digest table of good, bad, and ugly for each of the different managed offerings and what each of them offer. And it's just really, I found it really easy to digest because I haven't really done a lot with GKE or EKS, and I've really only used AKS. And so it's nice to see or interesting to see the differences between the two. So they talk about things like, whether it's got managed control planes, regions support, auto repair, network policy support, all sorts of stuff. They talk about all that. Anyway, so you can go read up about that. But it relates to the interview we're about to roll with a very special guest, Brendan Burns, who was one of the co-founders of Kubernetes, who we had on the show quite a while back, right after he joined Microsoft. Mm. So we're very lucky to be able to catch up with him at the Microsoft Ignite conference. And we're actually sitting out on the expo floor at a table. So there's a fair bit of noise and all that sort of stuff, but we got to spend a short period of time with him, super busy guy, was really nice and willing to sit down with us. And it was just great to catch up with him again on what's going on with AKS and what are the sort of container-based projects he's working on at Microsoft and how it's all gone and things like that. So we really hope you get something from this interview. And like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. It was great to catch up with him. And yeah, we're really lucky to get him back on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was we had him on the show around episode 162. It was a while back. Whichever one it is, we'll make sure that we put it in the show notes so that you can take a listen to it. But yeah, pretty cool.
All right, let's have a quick word from our sponsors and then roll the interview.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today. A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. Hey, welcome, Brendan, to the Microsoft Cloud Show again.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
So we had you on the show a couple of years ago, right after you just joined Microsoft, I think it was, and you talked to AC. AC's also here.
I'm here. Hello.
Welcome back. So it's been a couple of years now, I think, you've been at Microsoft.
Yeah, been an exciting couple of years.
Obviously, very busy ones
as
well.
Yes, yeah, very much so, very much so.
So we've spoken a ton about containers on the show over the last few years, really, and especially since I think you joined Microsoft in a couple of years ago and started work on Kubernetes-based kind of initiatives. But obviously all of that's sort of come to fruition now. And
have you got
your little Ship It Award yet?
No, I don't know. I don't know if they give those out anymore. I do have a little cube from the Deus acquisition.
Oh, nice.
So they did give us a little cube. Cool. I don't know if they do the Ship It things anymore.
Gotcha.
I see them around, but not
little war trophies.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, now obviously AKS has GA'd some time back.
Mm-hmm.
How's that been, shipping first sort of big major product at Microsoft?
It's pretty cool. It's been great. I mean, in all honesty, actually, shipped a few before that, actually, and maybe not as big as AKS, but Cloud Shell and actually even Azure Container Instances went out before. But it's been great. I think the most important thing there was the first thing, really, where the Deus team from the acquisition really participated very materially in the creation of AKS. Yeah. And so it was great to see that team come together and build and launch something. So that was cool. And actually, interest has been fantastic. At times, almost too fantastic.
Right.
As we're, scaling to keep up with increased load. I think I underestimated how much the GA marker would change. Like, I sort of told everybody, like, why would there be a launch spike, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like somebody wakes up and they're like, oh, now I'm gonna do cluster containerization, right? Like, that's a long-term thing, right? It's not like a website or something where you're just like, oh, I'll go, browse that today because it was on the news. But actually, we have seen a significant uptick in the GA, and part of that's getting to a bunch of regions.
More data centers and more
Australia and Southeast Asia, Europe, and so that's part of it. So as people who couldn't have previously accessed the service now can access the service,
it
grows. But also, just for whatever reason, the fact that it says GA on it, people. Well, I mean, it makes sense, I guess.
But I was one of them. Yeah. I was sitting there.
Yeah.
I sat at Build, and I talked to Gabe Monroy, just quietly. We were doing a session with him, a podcast recording. And I, just after the session, I was like, dude, I really need to know if I'm going to be good. I have to get off Docker Cloud.
Right.
I'm going to Kubernetes one way or another.
Right.
And like,
this is the way I want to go.
Am I going to be able to use AKS? Because I'm not cool with doing it on a preview.
Right,
I was one of the launch specs, I'm pretty sure.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good.
So maybe there was a whole raft of people.
A whole bunch of people who are.
It is kind of surprising though, because Kubernetes is still a relatively new thing to the Microsoft sort of world of customers, I think.
Sure.
And obviously, Microsoft Enterprise customers are the sort of first-class citizens in Azure, right? Yeah. And so I guess I wouldn't have quite expected the gold rush kind of.
Well, there's a couple of different things going on. I think there's a lot of people who really are feeling the need for agility. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of people who I'm talking to who really need to get to how do I push code, you know, every week.
Right.
Like even just getting to once a week is a lift
tough
for them,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And they really see containerization and Kubernetes as the way to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily like sometimes think that maybe they overestimate a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like you need to change your culture and your process too.
Yeah.
And so I worry a little bit that people think, oh, we just adopted this technology, and so therefore, you know, magic happens, and the code just goes out.
Step one, collect underpants. Step three, profit.
Profit, yeah, exactly. I think step two is install Kubernetes. But it is true that I think that people are actually using it successfully, as long as they understand that it takes changing their teams as well as changing the product. And then I think the other thing that's happening is that, you know, I don't know, I feel like with Azure, we're talking to a lot of people who might not otherwise have been Microsoft customers.
Mm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking to a lot of people where you can go in and they're Linux and Java shops and they don't have a single, you know, maybe they have Office 365. Maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And probably they have Active Directory. But that's it.
Yep.
You know, and they're still very happy Azure customers. So I think that's part of it too, is that like I'm not sure that while there is overlap between the, you know, the traditional Microsoft Enterprise customer and the Azure customer, I don't think it's a perfect overlap.
There's a lot of people who are
maybe exclusively Azure customers.
Yeah, gotcha.
With the people with so many, you're talking about so many external customers that have been adopting it, have you seen some internal customers as well starting to leverage it and building new product and stuff on top of it?
Yeah, for sure. No, we've seen, I mean, some of my teams, like Cloud Shell itself actually builds on top of Kubernetes. That's maybe more obvious. But yeah, we have people in cognitive services and, especially in cognitive services, I think, because there's been so much machine learning work. Mm-hmm. Like Kubernetes has sort of become the platform on which you deploy machine learning workloads.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people are looking to take advantage of some of the open source machine learning stuff that's out there.
That's cool. Yeah.
Kubernetes is sort of the first step. Right.
Right.
Like,
I see.
It's the thing that allows you to deploy all the stuff on top. But beyond that, seeing a lot of people who are deploying applications, new services on top. I would say not very much migration. A lot of new stuff, you know, new development.
What do you see, like, I mean, it seemed like in the last maybe a couple of years ago when containers was like the cool thing to talk about. Everyone was talking about it. Everybody wanted, Docker was starting exploding when Kubernetes exploding. But then things have kind of gotten a lot more calm. People now see it not so much as like bleeding edge tech anymore. It's kind of like it's reliable, it's stable, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, AKS hitting it at the same time maybe helps a little bit too with that same.
I think so. Microsoft adopting it. I think like seeing a bunch of other enterprises adopting it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you can't bump into an enterprise software vendor that isn't selling Kubernetes in one way or another, or multiple ways. A couple of them have multiple options. And so I think that helps.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I mean, the project too, right? Like, it's maturing. Yep. I mean, I was joking at one point, people are starting to work on, like, policy. Like when you're starting to add policy, you're not like in startup land anymore.
Well, we're really growing up now. Yeah. I was gonna actually ask.
We drink
about
out of clean coffee cups.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask, are you still heavily involved in the project and maybe not on a day-to-day basis, but just in general, obviously.
Yeah, so I mean I think my primary work these days, well, I have my like hobbyist coding work. But my primary work has been on the steering committee, and as we sort of have sorted out governance over the last year, year and a half, where we really, you know, two years ago, we didn't really have any formal governance at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you have a project with 1,800 people who've contributed to Kubernetes itself, and that's not even the ecosystem. That's just like the GitHub Kubernetes repo. There's 1,800 people who've contributed. Obviously, long tail and all that. But there was a real realization that we had to formalize how the thing was run.
Yeah.
Because people just didn't know. Like all these new people, like if you'd been there from the beginning, you just kind of knew because you knew because you'd grown up with it.
Right.
But like all of these people who are trying to join in, they really were eager to participate, but they didn't know how.
Right.
You know, because there was nothing was written down. Nothing was formalized. And so there's been a lot of work, you know, even just simple things like a code of conduct.
Mm. Right.
we should have had that from the start, right? And we didn't. Those are things where...
Hey, well, Linus is just figuring this out now.
Well, we're not going to go there. We're not going to talk about that. But I believe strongly in code of conduct, and I believe, you know, it. I've always tried to build a really inclusive community. I think Kubernetes from the ground up has always really strived very hard to be welcoming and inclusive, and I actually think it's part of its success, or at least I hope it is. But even beyond that, I mean, just sort of like, how do we decentralize decision-making? And we've reached a place where we're starting to split up the GitHub repo because we're realizing that GitHub doesn't scale to where not in terms of like, oh, it's too slow, but in terms of like the way that they have organizations.
Like just the workflow aspects of it.
Yeah. Parts of it, and just things like, I mean, just little things like, you can't assign an issue to somebody who isn't part of an organization.
Yeah.
I see.
Right? But then putting someone in an organization has all these like RBAC implications. And
it just
is like little stuff, right? Maybe once they're fully part of Microsoft, we'll go and we'll give them a little talking to.
Hey, we need some more features.
Yeah. Well, and it's actually good, I think, because I think they were spending a lot of time on project management features, because they thought that that was how they were going to sell to enterprise.
I
think now that they're part of Microsoft, like maybe the pressure to make money is not there as much, right?
Yeah.
They're really there to empower developers and help with Azure. And so I think as a result, they can focus a little bit more on the developer side and not so much on the like project management side. And,
yeah, that's
and
a good
I think
point.
We'll get some of those features that we maybe had some trouble getting before.
I'd love to. So. That also seems to be a problem Docker have had in the last couple of years, at least from what my perspective is. They've very much been forced down the path of, we've got to go figure out how to make some money. Mm-hmm. And that's what led us to Kubernetes, actually. From Docker Cloud, they acquired Tudum, and it was sort of a whole roll-your-own orchestration stuff that they'd packaged, but you know they gave up on Docker Cloud, and I believe it was because they put all the cookies in the enterprise basket and needed to go make some money. So it should be really nice for GitHub to be freed up.
Yeah, I think. I mean, someone said sort of half jokingly at one point, but like public cloud is the best open source business model that exists, right? Like, you know, in some ways, it really is true that it's hard if you're an independent open source. Mm. A software company, it's hard to find that slot where you make money, right? You know, like there's a few out there. Atlassian has done a pretty good job of it, and a few others, but like it's tough sledding, I think.
Sure.
I know the Deus folks felt that way, right? You know, and they were really happy to get in, do the acquisition, and really be able to focus on building great stuff and building up, you know, the Kubernetes product, but also a bunch of tooling, the VS Code extension that we built, and Helm and Draft, and all this stuff that we built on top, without really that pressure. As long as AKS is growing, then we're good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, make the pie bigger.
Make the pie bigger, right, exactly. Yeah. You don't have to be competitive, really.
Right.
I mean, we're competitive with other clouds, obviously, but like beyond that,
it's really nice. And you have 100,000 people working for you now, effectively, right?
Salesforce
all around the world.
Exactly, and that's amazing, too, and I think just the ability to get the word out. I remember we did one of the first launches after the Deus team joined, and like, they were just ecstatic at the level of press and whatnot that they'd gotten. And I was just sort of like, this is just kind of a day at the office. Right? Like, you know, like there's a real power that comes, and it's awesome, being part of this big company where you have connections and you can, you know, have a show like this where the media comes and pays attention.
Yeah. People listen, right?
People listen, for sure.
So we are at Ignite. There's been some awesome announcements and so forth this week. Specifically, what stuff have you been involved with that's been talked about as kind of new things coming to AKS and containers and Azure?
There's a variety of things we've been adding into AKS to sort of make it more enterprise friendly, I guess, is what I would say. You know, there's one of the things I learned as you get deeper into some of these companies is, you know, they have very specific ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in place probably for 20 years, and they're not changing, no matter how much you might want to convince them to change it. And so, you know, networking was a big one there, where, you know, we go into companies where, like, their developers can't create subnets.
Right.
Like, which I'm a little surprised by, but is the way it is. Mm. And so initially, like, they couldn't use AKS. Seems like a little thing. Like, you can't create subnets, you can't use AKS. Okay, well, that's a problem, right? We need to go fix that. So, you know, we did a bunch of work to enable people to bring an AKS cluster into a custom virtual network environment.
I see.
It's pre-existing. Right? Gotcha. Their networking team built for them or otherwise. Or maybe it has an express route connected to the corporate network.
Yeah.
Also allowing customization of the IP ranges so that you know, they're already using 10.0 through whatever. If we're not going to try and clobber them and take the same IP ranges.
Yeah, gotcha.
And then the other side of it is a lot around authentication and authorization. So, you know, another complaint that we got from people, a legitimate complaint, was, you know, well, you created this cluster, you gave this person the certificate to authorize to that cluster, that person left the company, what do I do?
Yeah.
And we'd say, hey, create a new cluster? which obviously is like a bad answer, right? And so, you know, we rolled out AAD integration for authorization to the cluster. So now you can use AAD groups, you can use standard AAD login. I just did the demo with my two-factor, you know, so I can't access that Kubernetes cluster unless I've done the two-factor dance.
You've gone through all the regular enterprise policy that they've put in place around auth and all that sort of stuff.
All of that stuff, right?
And you can revoke it and all that stuff.
And you can revoke it, and you can use groups, so you can use AAD groups for privileges, so you don't even have to revoke an individual's. You just take them out of the group, and now they've lost access to O365, they've lost access to Azure, they've lost access to Kubernetes, they don't get their email, like all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's definitely in the like enterprise camp. And I like to do a little mix of both new stuff and enterprise stuff too. So we're also pretty excited to announce the private preview of this integration between AKS and Azure Container Instances for burst capabilities and for, you know, fast scale out. And I think ultimately, you know, I'm really a believer that we're on this path to nodeless Kubernetes, right? To a world where, like, you don't see the machines, right? And so this is sort of the beginning of that path.
I've always wondered how long it would take us to get back full circle to Ray Ozzie's original vision for Azure with PaaS and things. And it seems it was just way too far ahead of its time at the time, but eventually we'll get there.
I think it's actually more about modularity, right? So, I mean, what I like to say is the hallmark, because I think this has been an interesting realization in container orchestration, because I think people really set it up as this, like, PaaS versus IaaS dichotomy, right? And I think what we've seen with container orchestration and containers is that there's a middle path, and that now we're building up from that middle path. But we're doing it with principled layers and modular layers, right? So that I think the trouble with a lot of the early PaaS work was it's a walled garden, right?
Yeah.
And so if you love it, it's great. But the minute you have to leave,
there's no picking and choosing either, right?
There's no picking and choosing. It's like, even if you love nine out of the 10 features, if you need customization on that 10th feature, you have to let go of all the other nine.
Yeah.
Right? That's a terrible, terrible decision that you have to make. You know, the analogy that I sort of often have used with teams is there's a really big difference between jumping out of a parachute or jumping out of a plane without a parachute and hoping that you can learn to fly on the way down versus, like, you know, which I think is the way old PaaS was.
Yeah.
It was like, it did all this stuff for you, and then you, like, you get out and you're like, you're on IaaS, and it's like, wait, I have to restart it, I have to, like, scale it, I feel, you know, like, da-da-da-da. Versus something like, you know, saying like, hey, you know what, we're gonna fire the gardener. And like each week, the grass gets a little bit longer, and then eventually you learn how to mow it. But it's like, it's not a really dramatic experience, right?
Yeah.
It's a much more gradual sort of coming to the right place. So
yeah, you're not feet to the flames, all in, no other option.
Exactly, and I think that's, if you build things that way, if you look at the successful systems, right? If you look at successful operating systems with Windows, if you want to use their event handling for mouse or for joysticks and things like that, you can, but you can also just take over the window and splat random pixels in. Right? It's not like just because you wanted to write a 3D game that splatted pixels in, you suddenly couldn't use printing and you suddenly couldn't use the mouse. Like, you had this graduated, like, choice around which capabilities of the system you wanted to use and which capabilities you wanted to implement yourself.
Gotcha.
Right? I think if we build systems that way in the cloud, then they will be successful in a way that PaaS wasn't. And I think it's not because PaaS was wrong, right?
Yeah.
It's simple. Everybody wants simple, right? Everybody wants simple and easy. It's just that simple and easy is not the same for everyone, and you need that modularity so that you can pick and choose and find the places where it's important to you to customize.
You need to be able to dial up and down on your own spectrum of where you want to be at.
Everybody's level of understanding is going to be different, and everybody's business requirements are going to be different. Yeah. There really is no one-size-fits-all. And I think that's one of the things, though, that, you know, has happened with containers, is that suddenly if you build a PaaS on top, and we see more and more PaaSes being built on top of the container orchestration layer, and if you do that, suddenly, well, the container's the same everywhere, right? Like you're tired of the functions as a service experience, eject it as a container, now you have a bare container, you can go deploy it with the Helm chart.
Gotcha.
Same code.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, but you're like, I'm functions as a service isn't working for me anymore. I need something long running. But I can take it out and I can use it in a different environment. Or even, you know, things like service discovery and load balancing. It's the same, right? So my functions as a service can access a containerized application that's running just in bare Kubernetes, right? With a load balancer, right? That's the kind of thing that couldn't happen in PaaS.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. So I have a couple of questions before we wrap up. I know you're super busy at Ignite, so
let
you get on.
Lots of running around.
I've got two questions. One, what's it like getting a do-over? So got to go do Kubernetes at Google for quite some time.
Sure.
Now you get to hopefully learn from that experience, and you get a chance. As a software developer, we all want to go back and rewrite code, right? And I'm not saying you're rewriting what you did at Google, but
sure,
there aren't very many opportunities where you get to do it again or do it better next time. And I guess, how's that experience been?
Well, I mean, parts of it are really great because, of course, you know, you see some of the roadblocks.
Yeah.
Parts of it are really frustrating because you hit that same thing again and you're like, like, I should have seen that one coming. Right? Like, you're like, oh, yeah, because you forgot. You're like, you forget things and, you hit that and you're like, oh, right. Yeah. I remember when we ran into that problem.
I should have taken better notes.
I should have taken better notes. Yeah, no, I mean, that probably wouldn't be okay, actually. I think I had to burn my notes.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's true. That's a good point.
It's been fun. It's been really great to be able to build the team, get to know the team, both on the product side and on the engineering side.
Yeah.
That's been really awesome. And, you know, I think it's been really great to learn. Microsoft has a really great sense of product, I think, a really great sense of how you build things that users want to buy, and that's been really great to get access to and to gain benefit from and learn from. So it's been a really enjoyable experience.
Nice. We also like to ask our guests periodically, if you had a week off, just hypothetically, and you can have internet access, but you're not allowed to play Xbox.
Yeah.
Then
it's been so long since.
What would you
Xbox?
Learn? Like, what's something on your list that has just been bumped further? You know, I've got this massive long list of things I want to read, things I want to learn about.
Yeah,
but I never get to them.
Every year, my mom like gives me books, and like they go in the stack of my books that I haven't read. I actually recently got to sort of to scratch the tech itch that I'd wanted to do, which is I finally, after having it sit in its box for, I don't know, a year or more, I finally pulled out the Arduino that I was playing around with
and
started like building out. I was inspired by, we had some forest fires in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
Lots of smoke. And I was like, I kind of really want to know what's happening with like the air quality around here.
Yeah.
So I got like this little cheap air quality sensor and got it all wired up to the Arduino, and it's plugging data into Influx, into InfluxDB and using Grafana to visualize it all in a Kubernetes cluster. And so like that was the one where I finally got a chance to like do something that I've been meaning to do for a while. So I don't know what's next. I'll have to find I don't know what's the next one after that.
Sure.
That's
a good one.
I've managed to scratch that itch recently.
Yeah, little pet projects that you never seem to find the time for, right?
It is cool to get to do. And I think as my kids have gotten a little older, they've provided a good excuse so that I can do it with them.
Yeah, that's really great.
I don't feel like I'm skipping out. I feel like I'm helping them learn about engineering and that sort of stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, well, we really appreciate the time sitting down with us again. It's awesome to see everything that's going on with AKS and Kubernetes at Microsoft.
Yeah.
And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
All right, AC. We caught up with Brendan. That was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that chat with him.
It really was. It was a fun discussion with him because it's interesting to see. Like right before we sat down with him, I watched him do one of those, what do you call it?
Mechanics shows.
Yes, thank you. The Microsoft Mechanics shows. Mm-hmm. He did that for about 15, 20 minutes, showing off some of the new stuff that they had recently done. And that we talked about in the episode. But it's funny, not funny, it's cool to see that Kubernetes grows up, builds, kind of is incubated over on, what do you call it, over on in Google. And then Brendan comes over to Microsoft, helps get, you know, a lot of the container story really rolled out in Office 365 or in Azure. And then helps it grow up and becomes more enterprise friendly with a lot of the RBAC support, a lot of more security things, being able to work with special networking stuff, which is, it's kind of, it's Microsoft's bread and butter on the enterprise side. So it really puts Kubernetes, you know, at a different level from a lot of the stuff, a lot of their competitors that are hosting it, like in from AWS and from GCP. Definitely. So it's a really cool offering. And it's, I tell you, you know, the container story, Microsoft is, it's not so much a Kubernetes thing, but it really gets to, this is a good thing. So this is not, I'm not saying it's negative, but man, it's really confusing to say, like, you know, which direction do you go? Do you use AKS and host it and stand up your own cluster and manage your cluster? Or like as Brendan talked about in the interview, are we going to finally get to the point where it's containers as a service where I don't really care how many nodes it takes? I really just want to buy a certain amount of compute, certain amount of storage, or a certain amount of memory. I want them to manage all the nodes and everything. Could care less about it, be nodeless. Then recently finding out that, hey, now Azure Functions can support deploying your components or your stuff via containers. Then you got Azure Container Instances. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I can do this with Functions, why would I use Container Instances? And I get that AKS can use it with that virtual kubelet that we talked about. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's so many different options and it's hard to decide which one do you use because you've got all these options.
Yep, but at least you can pick and choose based on your scenario and go prototype stuff and see what works best for you and choose your own adventure, so to speak. But yeah, if you're looking for one shot, like this is what you have to do, then you're not going to get that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, anyway, super cool to sit down with him again. It's just fascinating just to chat with somebody who's had such an impact on the industry like this. I love these conversations with people like Scott Guthrie and Brennan Burns and the likes, where they've worked on stuff that's had an impact on so many people. Mm-hmm. It's always fun. Now, before we wrap up, let's do some picks.
Let's do some picks.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
Bam. You want to go first, AC?
I can go first. Absolutely. So debating about putting this in our banter and decide what the hell, make this one of my picks. This isn't so much good news. And this is kind of I think it's still kind of unknown. I don't think this has all been fully resolved yet. But earlier this week on October the 8th, news came out that the Hubble Space Telescope has gone into safe mode. One of its gyros has failed. And there are, I'm going to save you from a lot of you and I could probably talk about this for another episode, but I'm going to save the listener from a lot of the details of this. And if you'd like to see more information, go to the link that we have in the show notes. But the Hubble has multiple gyros that it uses, and not all of them are always in use. And they have known that one of the gyros was going to fail. And the idea was to be able to run it with, you know, other gyros. So one had failed. It had been exhibiting what they call end-of-life behavior for about a year, and its failure was not unexpected. There's two other gyros that it has, though, that are of the same type. They had already failed. So there are three additional gyros available for use that are technically they're enhanced, and therefore they're expected to have a significantly longer operational lives. Two of those enhanced ones are currently running, and they had a bit of an issue on when they brought the third one back up, that it wasn't performing the way it was supposed to. And that's what sent the thing into safe mode. They don't know what they're still trying to figure out exactly what they can do. Thankfully, it's not affecting anything at the moment, but gonna have to kind of keep an eye on this one, unfortunately. This is looks a little sad.
And no shuttle to go service Hubble.
No shuttle. No, we have nothing that can do that right now. I mean, that's the best of my knowledge.
Shuttle went and replaced all the gyros. That was its last servicing mission, I believe, if I remember correctly, at least. And didn't they start off with like six gyros or something like that? Now they're down to three, one anomalous one. And then if they can't get the anomalous one back up and running, probably they're going to drop to one. So they've got one in reserve. I don't think Hubble's going to drop offline anytime soon. It's just not going to be able to do certain things.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but
anyway, yeah.
And then the next telescope that we have is the the James Webb. But and that was supposed to go up later. That was supposed to go up this year, but that got pushed back as well. So I'm not sure what the next when that's planned to go up, if that's going to go up in 2019 or if it got pushed back even farther.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it'll
be, anyway.
Yeah, hopefully.
So
I've just realized that my link in the show notes to my pick is completely wrong. So I'll fix that. But before we send the notes out, but what I was going to point out is there is a British astronaut called Tim Peake, who's been to ISS for a while, and he has revealed the puzzle test that he had to pass as part of his astronaut qualification going to ISS. And it's kind of like an IQ test / I don't know what you'd mix it with. I'm really not sure what the correct psychology term is for it. It's pretty interesting. They're quite hard puzzles. So if you're interested, you'd be able to follow this link, and it's, you know, like guess particular patterns and sequence, all that sort of stuff. Do some funky math, do a bunch of things like that. Anyway, it's pretty cool. I found it really challenging. I haven't sat through the whole thing. It's quite long. I just picked a few of them. I found them pretty hard. Like, some of them are much harder than others, but it was pretty fun to do. So go take a look, sit the test, see how you do. Maybe you become an astronaut.
I'll take a look at that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll find the correct link and make sure it's in the show notes. All right, AC, great interview from Ignite. Some interesting news from Google and Microsoft and patents and social networks and all that sort of stuff, and Kubernetes and Linux and lots of goodies.
Even some spacey stuff.
Yeah. So we'll see you guys all next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.